This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The good news is that fewer kids are having kids. Teenage pregnancy and teenage parenthood are down. And there is more good news. More young dads are working to stay involved in their children's lives. But nothing makes fatherhood easy, and teenage fathers can feel overwhelmed when an infant arrives in what's often the most difficult time of their lives. This hour, we'll take a look at what it's like to be a teenage father, how to help young dads face the challenges of parenthood, and how and when to talk to boys about how to prevent teen pregnancy in the first place. Later in the program, Sam Donaldson joins us to talk about the late David Brinkley, whose career spanned the entire history of television journalism. But first, teenage fathers. Are you a teen and a parent? What role do you play in your child's life? Or if you were raised by a teen, what was that like? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from the studios of member station KUVO in Denver, Colorado, are two people involved in the Young Fathers Program. Timothy Gonzalez just graduated from the program yesterday. He's 18 years old and has a young son. Also with us is Anthony Pino. He's the Fatherhood Parenting Coordinator. And welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Timothy, why don't we start with you? When did you become involved in the Young Fathers Program?
About January of this year.
And what was involved in it?
It just lets you know how to take care of your kid and just provide a positive role model for your your son and be active in the relationship with the mother and son.
And you're determined to have an active role in your child's life. Is it a son?
Yeah, it's my son. He just turned one. June 9th.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Timothy.
Timothy. Just yeah. Like you. So you're going to stay involved in his, you plan to stay involved in his life?
Yeah, I do.
Nevertheless, the challenges of dealing with an infant, that's very difficult.
It is. Sometimes you don't know what to do, and you have to learn as a you learn by just listening to,
people who know better than you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do they give you a phone number to call when there's something that happens you're not sure what to do about?
Well, you learn what to do. Your kid kind of teaches you, you know.
That's true.
Serious. After you've been around him long enough, you understand what he wants and his needs, and you cater to them.
Anthony Pino, can you tell us a little bit about what Timothy was like when he first arrived and how the program has helped him deal with some of these difficulties?
Yeah, I remember when Timothy first came into the program, he was pretty mixed up. He was ready to leave his girlfriend, and he didn't like her very much. She was going to leave him, and he was pretty mixed up. He didn't have a job. He was going through some of the court systems, and it's just amazing to see the transformation that Timothy has made since going through the program. And like you mentioned, he did graduate yesterday, was his last day of class, but he still is going to continue to come to the programs to get the support and of the other young fathers and also of the staff at the Young Fathers Program.
Timothy, let me ask you how things are working out with your girlfriend.
Right now they're doing fine. I mean, I've been working. I've been trying to go to school. I'm trying to get enrolled in college right now. Everything's been doing good. I'm there every day after work, helping her with the kid, and we're doing fine now. So. Mm.
That's great. Anthony, what message do you give kids to help them become better dads?
It's like in the classes, I sort of switch the tactics of just not telling them how to care for their children, but how to care for themselves and believe in themselves and believe that being a young father is very important and to believe that they're important in that child's life. I see a lot of these guys that come in, the majority of them do not have fathers. They have no idea what being a father is. I have no doubt that they love their children.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, what is really being there. That's what they all say. Because I ask them when they first come in, why are you here? Well, I want to be there for my baby. But is being there, you know, what is being there? You could be there and be in the child's life, but not be involved in the child's life. And it's going to, they're going to grow up just, I mean, being, not knowing their father. Mm-hmm. So know what their eye color is, know what, who their friends are, know what shoe size they wear, and you know, just be aware of everything. Really be there for your child.
I was curious about one thing you said, and that's that the, many of these kids, the teenage fathers, don't have fathers themselves.
Yeah, most of them, well, of course, everyone has a father, but the father's not involved in the child's life. I mean, when I say involved, he's not there. Even if they're physically there, they're not there because they don't get involved. It happened to me. I was a young father myself. You know, at 15, 10 days later, I turned 16, but I wasn't there for her. I was always there monetary-wise for my daughter, Andrea, but I wasn't there mentally, emotionally, psychologically, you know. And she grew up being a teen mother herself, you know, and my other kids, I have three other children, and I think I was, when I started to make this change and believe in my son, believe I was important in their life, you know, that's, I mean, one's in college, one's in the Navy, the other one's 14, but she's a straight-A student in school, you know.
Well, congratulations with that. Timothy, let me ask you, one of the most frustrating things, or one of the many frustrating things that can happen to in young parents' lives is that the arrival of this infant, they just take a tremendous amount of time. You don't have time to go out with your friends anymore, to go to the places and do the things you used to do.
Right. I haven't been out with my friends for, like, the last 8 months. But, I mean, it's fun just watching your son, and I mean, it just makes you happy just to sit there and just to see him grow up, and so I mean, it's not too bad. It does take a lot of time. Like, after I get home from work, I want to get enrolled in college, but I sometimes don't have the time to go down, because with my family and work, and I go to Young Fathers Program, and I do a lot of other stuff. It's kind of hard to fit everything in my schedule, but everything's going pretty good. So,
I know you love your son. Do you have any regrets, though, about going on this part of your life's journey at this age?
I love my son very much, and I don't really have any regrets. Everything happens for a reason, I think. So, if I could do it over again, I would wait. So I can be more financially available to my son and my family. But other than that, everything's going pretty fine.
Well, again, congratulations on graduating from the program, and we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you.
And Anthony Pino, same with you.
Thank you.
And Timothy Gonzalez and his mentor, Anthony Pino, are both with the Young Fathers Program, and they joined us from the studios of member station KUVO in Denver, Colorado. Our main focus this hour is teenage fathers, how to cope with the responsibilities and the difficulties of being a young parent, and the issues involved in all of that. Later on in the program, we'll also be talking with a man who counsels parents on how to advise their children not to get involved in teenage pregnancy in the first place, particularly difficult in speaking with boys. Our telephone number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from his office in Santa Clara, California, is Hector Sanchez Flores. He coordinates over 20 programs in California that strive to promote male responsibility, and he's on the board of the National Organization on Adolescent Pregnancy, Parenting, and Prevention. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Neil.
I know you were listening to Timothy's story. How does it compare with some of the young men you know?
I think Timothy's story is remarkable in that, you know, no matter what community you're in, you'll find young men like Timothy. Timothy's very fortunate to have Mr. Pino, who is there to assist him in his development. That's one of the parts of the story that is often lacking in many communities across the country, is that you have the young fathers, but there's no way to welcome them into a service delivery model that will help them in their, you know, development and personal development as well as parental development. So the outcome of this young man graduating, I want to congratulate him. It's remarkable for all young people, but particularly for a young man who's navigating young fatherhood and relationships and all that. Much credit should be deserved. He earned much credit for doing that, and also much credit goes for the people that have supported him.
Our telephone number again, 800-989-8255. And let's begin with a phone call from Joe, who's with us from Duluth, Minnesota.
Hi, good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon.
I run a national organization for fathers of daughters, and was a young father myself. And I think the stories that are being told are really about sacrifice, and I think it's important for us as fathers to recognize the value of the sacrifices we make. You know, the time we're able to spend with our kids and investing in our kids' development is irreplaceable. Our kids only have one chance at their childhood, and we only have one chance to be their dad during their childhood. So, we have to think about that while we're in the midst of it and not worry so much about, are we going to get this promotion or are we going to have that night out with our friends or whatever, but to focus on this irreplaceable time that we have with our kids.
Joe, do you remember when, you know, this happened with you? Fatherhood at any age can be overwhelming. I mean, you're confused about what to do. It's also that you're looking ahead in life and you realize what, you know, just the extent of the commitment you've just brought upon yourself.
And I, one of the things I struggled most with when I have twins who are now adults, thank God, but when they were babies, my wife and I were working part time and juggling a whole bunch of different things, and I really struggled with feeling like I was failing as a father because I wasn't providing enough money, that it wasn't, you know, getting a raise and I wasn't getting promoted. So if I look back on it now and I think that's crazy, the amount of time I was able to spend with my kids, you know, no amount of money could replace that. And, you know, that was the most important thing. And sure, we were poor, we were on food stamps, we were struggling, but it was worth it to be able to spend that much time with my kids. You know, that you see the payoff every single day in yourself, because I think it changes us as men to become fathers, and it enriches our lives too.
Hector, I assume that those are similar things. Those are similar to many of the stories that you know about.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. I think where we tend to struggle is that I think young people, especially young fathers, they get the message that the caller just tried to get us to, you know, think beyond the financial part of it. These young fathers, when they're young and they go and they're confronting their fatherhood, you have families putting pressure on them to say, you know, what are you going to do financially for this child? You rarely get some families that are saying, you know, what are you going to do in terms of time and how are you going to assist in the development? And then for a long time, society would really, the most pervasive program was going after these young fathers for, you know, child support and arrears. So there was this message both within their personal lives and then in this broader societal one, saying that the most important thing that you can do is provide financially. And although that is very important, I think that needed to be balanced by exactly what the caller said, is the how it is that you're present for your child and how this helps give that child a better head start and a better perspective on life. I think that the programs that are doing this across the country are attempting to do just that. And helping a young person navigate their development, their adolescent development in their teenage years, in addition to building their skills as fathers. And if we could accomplish that the way this caller stated, I think we would be, you know, the future would be very bright for those communities that have a lot of teen fathers.
So, one of the things we need to do is to be available for one another as fathers. That's the value of organizations like my organization, dadsanddaughters.org, or the National Fatherhood Initiative, or different outfits like that that can provide guys with connections with one another and provide information.
More on all of those things when we come back from a break. Joe, thanks for the call. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about when teenagers become fathers and how to help them be dads. Our guest is Hector Sanchez Flores, who coordinates over 20 programs in California that work to promote male responsibility, and also a member of the board of the National Organization on Adolescent Pregnancy, Parenting, and Prevention. Were you a teenage dad, and how did you manage adolescence and fatherhood at the same time? Give us a phone call, 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255, and the email address, totn@npr.org. And Hector, I wanted to ask you, obviously the programs that we were talking about just before the break and the one that you're involved in, all of these are great, but there's an awful lot of young fathers who don't go to these programs. Isn't that right?
That is true. I think that for years, the programs that worked with teen parents, and they used to call them teen parent programs, worked almost exclusively with young mothers. And in the last 8 to 10 years, there have been this, you know, localized effort of people working with young fathers. Unfortunately, I think that it's a loose network, and they're not very well connected. We have about 20 years of, you know, development in programs that work with young mothers, and on fathers, we're less coordinated, less integrated. There's a lot of lessons to be shared and learned about how to do this best. I think what we have learned is that initially, the programs that were trying to reach fathers, young fathers, were basically female or teen mother programs that were now, you know, including young fathers, and the young fathers didn't participate. They knew that the messages and the strategies weren't resonating with them. And so when you meet people like Mr. Pino, who have begun to develop strategies to outreach and attract these young men, you find them having lessons to teach other people. But no, by and large, we still have some growth in this area because we haven't been well integrated and connected, although that's improving.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller. Jennifer joins us on the line from Boise, Idaho.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a question for Hector. I am a single mom, and I have an 8-month-old son, and his father is not involved financially or in any way, really, in my son's life. And I was wondering, how could I encourage him to be involved, not so much financially, but, you know, in the ways that matter?
In my experience, when I used to be in direct service with young people, one of the operating emotions that used to keep these young guys from stepping into that realm was fear, intimidation. I don't know the father of your 8-month-old son, and I think that having him connected with a gentleman like who is the previous caller, a network of other people that are sharing some really positive things about the good side of fatherhood and the difficulties of fatherhood that kind of demystify this. You know, there are some skills that we need to learn as parents in general, as mothers and as fathers, and maybe perhaps that there's some fear, and I have no idea what the specific circumstances are.
Mm-hmm.
But that may be one of them. But the other thing is, you know, the child, you know, having contact with his father, if it's appropriate and it's safe. I mean, I presume all those things are true. It's true in most cases.
Yeah.
You know, that there has to be some level of persistence and communication between you two or somebody that he really trusts. There may be another friend, a mutual friend, that would be able to step in and say, you know, let's do this together. I'll walk with you. I'll support you and help, and let's be here for this child.
Jennifer, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how and when the relationship started to change? Was it when you got pregnant?
It was actually before I got pregnant. He lived in Coeur d'Alene and was moving back, and I got pregnant 2 days before he moved back.
Hmm.
Or I found out I was pregnant 2 days before he moved back, and
uh-huh.
He just moved back anyway.
So distance was part of the problem?
Yeah, it was a big part of the problem, and I think that I think it was an excuse.
Hmm.
Well, Jennifer, there may be a lot of things going on, but, you know, somebody to, you know, being an engaged father is much easier when you see engaged fathers around you.
Mm-hmm.
And I would really encourage, you know, that kind of effort, because pretty soon it can norm it. I know that's the experience that I've had with young fathers when they meet a young man like Timothy Gonzalez and you know, he's doing it. All of a sudden it's like, well, Timothy's doing it, and he's doing it like this. And it begins to help them envision how they would do it.
Well,
Hector, I don't know how old he is, but you know, that would be my, you know, there's a million things that you could do, but those are some very tangible things.
Would you suspect that there's a program Mr. Pino's or like yours in a city the size of Boise?
I don't know if there would be one in I think there is likely one there. It's just probably not part of a larger network, and you probably have to make some calls about programs that work with parents, both mothers and find out if there's a father component. Mm-hmm. The National Fatherhood Initiative may be able to assist on that.
Well, Jennifer, has he seen his son?
Twice.
Okay. Well, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
And hang in there.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good luck, Jennifer.
I wonder, Hector, could you just describe briefly for us, what's the difference between programs that are aimed at girls and the ones that are aimed at boys?
I think young women, young mothers, tend to be the primary caretakers of their child. So they really focus on, especially from, you know, pre-pregnancy and early birth, on, you know, what it is that a child needs. You see them address all the things about their healthy pregnancy development to early childhood development, things like breastfeeding and whatnot. The things for young men tend to focus on how you can be supportive of that process. And part of it is what goes on between the ears. If you've never, you know, the way Mr. Pino said is that many of these young men don't have fathers in their lives. So they don't have this image within their ears, in their mind, about how you do this. And so you give them skills and information so you can do this, and you hopefully can create some demonstrated practice type things. The second thing is that they know very well that they're not carrying this child, and they're worried about those things that go around it, the supportive parts. And young men are very tied up into how they're going to provide for the financial health of the family. And so, you know, when you're 15, 16, or 17, you know, in the economy that exists today, that's challenging and difficult. So you have to focus on the emotional side, on how you can be present, and how you can recognize certain things about your child and how they develop. Very similar things, but when you have a group of young men doing it, and you have a responsible, you know, person, preferably a person that really engages them, you know, the way they want to be, you'll find them kind of gravitating towards that information. I've seen programs that work by and large with young women, and you walk in and there'll be one young man there who's highly motivated to do that, but not all young men are as highly motivated as those young men that are willing to persist in programs that weren't designed for them.
Let's get another call. Andy is on the line with us from Douglas, Wyoming.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I just had a personal story I wanted to share that relates to this topic. 17 years ago, my girlfriend and I had to make a tough decision. She was 15, I was 17, and she was pregnant, and we decided to give the baby up for adoption. And it was, you know, the toughest thing, you know, is we wanted to keep that child, mm-hmm. but we felt that we wouldn't have done a very good job raising that child, and it was the toughest thing we ever did, and we ended up sticking together. We got married 5 years later, and I don't think if we had kept that child, we'd be married today. But now we have, you know, we took our time and had our next child, you know, when we were married 10 years after that child, and now that child, you know, the one that we had out of wedlock is 17 years old, and
I wonder when you hear about stories. I guess the most recent one was Jim Fossil, the coach of the New York Giants. He and his wife did something very similar when they were young and just met with their the son they had given away so many years ago. When you read about stories like that, it's got to be difficult for you.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I you know when he's 18. If he wants to look us up, he'll have his chance to look us up. But it, you know, it's up to him. And
you start already thinking about what you're going to tell him.
Well, sure. I've thought of that a lot. But you know, I want to know if he had a good life. You know.
Yeah.
I have a question, Andy.
Yeah.
Did you have support around you when you made that decision, you and your girlfriend, then-girlfriend?
Yeah, we did. We had support from her family and my family.
Okay. Well, Andy, thanks very much for the call, and good luck.
Okay, thanks.
All right, bye-bye. Let's get another call. Joining us now on the line is Charles, who's in Salt Lake City. Hey, Charles.
Yeah.
You're on the air.
Well, I have actually a similar story to Andy, only I did the opposite. I got married.
And did it turn out to be a wise decision?
For us, it did, yeah. We basically got married, and we've been married 10 years now, and we have 4 kids. And we, you know, that's what we like.
I can hear some of them in the background, I guess.
They are in the background, yes.
Uh-huh. Sometimes, and I'm not suggesting that this, obviously I've never met you and don't know what's going on, but some people can feel like they got trapped into a relationship this way. That's not the case in your situation?
Well, in our situation, we had been boyfriend and girlfriend for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
She got pregnant when she was 16, I was 17. And there was certainly a certain level of resentment in the first 4 years. I'd say it took a good 4 years before we really had a healthy marriage.
And the same question that Hector just asked to our previous caller, were there people around to whom you could speak, family members on both sides, role models?
Yes, and I would attribute those role models to being the only reason we are still married. I have both my wife and myself had 2 parents. Neither of them had ever been divorced. Both our parents have now been married 30-some-odd years. And that kind of support is what has allowed us to really make it.
Hmm.
I have a lot of friends who they'll make comments or joke about teenage pregnancy, and then they'll realize that I'm in the room and say, oh, no offense, Charles.
Hmm.
And but I don't take offense because, like Andy and so many other people, there are people who give their child up for adoption, and that's a very respectable thing to do as well. And when people say, oh, you know, I guess you're really pro-marriage, I'm not. I think that it's a case-by-case basis, and for us it was the right thing to do.
It sounds like you're in the middle of making lunch.
Someone is making lunch, yeah.
Somebody's making lunch, I see. Well, Charles, thanks very much, and I hope all of you and all of your kids enjoy your lunch.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay.
You know, Neil, the 2 callers are remarkable in that, you know, they are, in a different way, success stories. And one of the things that I've always, you know, when you meet these young people that are young parents, both young mothers and fathers, they always indicate that if they could, they would wait, you know, and that they somehow this experience has given them additional information that if they had it, they probably would have made other decisions. And some of those things I know you're going to deal with at the end, but
mm-hmm.
I think the young people today are really attempting to be more responsible, and they're showing us that they are. They teens that are sexually active are contracepting a bit better. Teens are waiting a little bit longer and to have sex, and they're reducing the frequency or the number of partners they have, and they tell us what their parents tell us is that they want accurate and comprehensive sexual health information. I mean, the parents tell us they want their young people to have them. The young people say that they want to have this information. But when we talk about really programs, we need to have these programs that address this with young men. Young men don't have the same physiological marker that young women go through. Young women have the onset of menses, and so therefore the people around them know that now they've hit a new sexual reproductive health plateau. Young men don't have this, and so we worry about when is too early, when is it, you know, too late. And, you know, these 2 callers, you know, show us that, you know, here they were. One was 17 and his partner was 15. They're young. And so we as adults have to begin to realize that we need to be sharing this information, accurate information, with our young people, not only about reproductive health and sexual health, but about the responsibilities of being a parent, particularly being a father.
And particularly that advice coming from their parents seemed to be an important part in their lives.
Although the parents tell us that they also want their schools involved. I mean, this is, you know, time and time again, statistics and studies tell us that although they want to be involved in this process, and we struggle because I don't know, you know, the vast majority of parents really do struggle with how to do this. But they also tell us that they want support from their schools on this topic.
Hector Sanchez Flores, thank you so much for being with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Okay, you too. Hector Sanchez Flores is a senior research associate and male involvement program liaison at the Institute for Health Policy Studies in San Francisco. He was on the line with us from his office in Santa Clara, California. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now from his office in Greensboro, North Carolina, is Rick Brown. We're talking about teen dads. If you'd like to know about how to talk with your kids about not getting pregnant, we're going to be discussing that for the remainder of our time on this subject. Our phone number again, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN at NPR.org. Rick Brown is coordinator of the Wise Guys program, a teen pregnancy prevention program for adolescent males. And good of you to be with us.
Glad to be here, Neil.
Okay. How has talking to boys changed in recent years?
Well, part of the change is simply that we are talking to boys. Hector made reference a few minutes ago that most of the programs, both for teen parents as well as preventive programs also, for years had been aimed at girls. And there was very much a sort of conventional philosophy that boys will be boys, meaning, you know, they're going to sow their wild oats because they can get away with it. And so it's really just been in the last decade or so that organized programs have come into being that are learning what's different about talking to boys. And
Can you give us a concrete example of how we talk to boys, or should talk to boys, differently than we do to girls?
Sure. There are a number. One of the things that comes to mind is looking at what's important to adolescent males in general and their kind of subculture, and of course the idea of proving their masculinity is a big part of that. And for a long time, you know, being sexually active was one of the key, if not the highest, ways that you proved that you're a man, proved your masculinity.
And proving it to your friends at the same time. If you if you get your girlfriend pregnant, you're going to have a lot less time for your friends.
Right. That's right. Although the reality of that doesn't always play into the decision when it's being made for some of these guys in the immediate moment. So part of what we try and do is to give them some new understandings of what it means to be strong as a male and to grow into a strong man. You know, that anybody of a certain age can procreate, but real strength means taking responsibility for that action. Meaning either not engaging in it if you're not ready to accept the consequences, or if you do engage in it and one of those consequences winds up being fatherhood, that you stick with it, as we've been hearing from your other guests and callers.
We're going to come back after a short break to continue talking about how to talk to boys about how to avoid pregnancy in the first place. Our telephone number again is 800-989-8255. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. We'll also be speaking with Sam Donaldson in a few minutes about the life of broadcaster David Brinkley, who died last night. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, join Ira Flatow on Science Friday for a look at the development of a national energy policy, including renewed interest in nuclear plants. Today, we're talking about how to talk with teens about prevention of pregnancy. Our guest is Rick Brown, coordinator of the Wise Guys program, a teen pregnancy prevention program for young men. And he was with us from his office in Greensboro, North Carolina. And if you'd like to join this conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. And let's go to a call. Liz joins us on the line from San Francisco.
Hi there, Neil. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a teen counselor, and I work with both boys and girls in their high school age, and obviously this issue comes up quite a bit. Often I'm working in the school situation, so I have to be careful about how I handle it. But my biggest concern comes to, I work with a lot of Catholic kids, and, you know, the issue is that, yes, premarital sex is considered not okay, but so is, and so is birth control considered not acceptable. And yet many of these kids still are having sex. So I have a hard time, you know, how do you counsel someone whose religion maybe tells them that birth control is not okay?
Rick?
Okay, well, that's an easy question to start with.
I'm glad you think it's easy.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you that part of what we do in the Wise Guys program, before we ever get to kind of talking about the, you know, the biology of it and how a pregnancy can happen, is to really look at it in the context of that this is a decision that these guys make, and nobody can make it for them. And there are a lot of things that need to be taken into account in that decision of whether or not and under what circumstances they would be sexually active as teens. And chief of those is their values. So part of it, when we talk about values, you know, if a young person is a member of a faith community, if their family families are, then that's an important part of where those values are going to come from. If they still want to choose to become sexually active, then it's going to be a tricky process of kind of negotiating, you know, the parameters they get from the values in that faith community.
Right, exactly. That's what I find is what I've been told when I finally just came out and asked the question, because I've had about 3 or 4 girls get pregnant this year. And, I come out and ask the question, okay, it's not okay to have premarital sex, but you kind of break that rule. How come it's not okay to break the other rule as well? And the answer I get is that that's planning, and planning is even worse than when something just happens.
Right, and this brings up a larger point, that even teenagers who are not dealing particularly with the sort of faith-based issue of it, you know, in America there's the idea that if you have a condom, you know, whether you're a male or a female, then that's sort of a negative mark, because it shows that you're planning to have sex, and so it's better not to have one.
That's a complicated issue. Liz, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And good luck with your program.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we get one more caller on this. Art joins us on the line from Los Angeles.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
What I wanted to bring up was, you know, this is obviously a big problem going on in our society, kids growing up without fathers. I think everybody realizes that a child will grow up healthiest if they have both a mother and a father. And I think when kids look at our media representations of, you know, the role models that media presents through movies, songs, and television, I think the idea of the male player, you know, is very strong right now. And it's, you know, what that's doing is sending the message that in order to validate yourself as a man, you should be able to move from one girl to another and, you know, be having sex and to treat women that way. And I just think it goes against the very, you know, exactly what this segment is trying to accomplish, you know, to get people to be responsible and to consider the consequences of their actions. And I just wanted to talk about that and
now,
talk about...
It's a good point, Art.
We're not doing anything about that in terms of school education and such.
Well, Art, it's an interesting point, and thanks very much for the call. You know, at the same time, there is that image, Rick, and at the same time, there's also a lot of movies and television shows about very committed fathers.
Sure, there are. There are groups that are working to change portrayals of sexuality in the media these days in terms of the messages that the young people get. But I think a more immediate issue becomes a lot of us are concerned about those messages, but I think sometimes what we as adults miss out on is that those actually become great opportunities for what we call teachable moments or for opening a dialogue. As long as we can be present for some of the time when our kids are watching a movie or a TV show or whatever's going on, and we think that there's a portrayal that's not very positive, it gives us a great chance to say, what did you think about how that character handled that situation? What would your friends think about that? What are some things that that character could have done differently? So while we're not always happy with media portrayals, they do give us a lot of opportunities to start or continue what can be a very helpful dialogue.
Well, Rick Brown, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Rick Brown is coordinator of the Wise Guys program, which is part of the Family Life Council in Greensboro, North Carolina, and he was with us from his office there.